Hannah and Gibber came to their room early the next morning with their team of assistants. After they had examined Merrin's eye socket, they pronounced him ready to take the next step. Gibber prepared a draught of the herbal opiate, while Hannah laid out her tray of instruments, then came to sit on the mat beside Merrin. From time to time, she drew up the lid of his good eye and studied the dilation of the pupil. At last she was satisfied that the drug had taken effect, and he was resting peacefully. She nodded to Gibber. He rose and left the room, to return a short while later with a tiny alabaster pot. He carried it as though it were the holiest of relics. He waited until the four attendants had restrained Merrin by his ankles and wrists, then set down the pot close to Hannah's right hand. Once again he took Merrin's head between his knees, opened the lids of his missing eye, and set the silver dilators in place. "Thank you, Dr. Gibber," Hannah said, and began to rock lightly and rhythmically on her haunches. In time to her movements, she and Gibber began a chanted incantation. Taita recognized a few words which seemed to have the same root as some verbs in the Ten Mass. He guessed that it might be a higher, more evolved form of the language. When they reached the end, Hannah took up a scalpel from her tray, passed the blade through the flame of the oil lamp, then made a quick hatching of shallow, parallel incisions in the inner lining of the eye cavity. Taita was reminded of a plasterer preparing the surface of a wall to receive an application of wet clay. There was a weeping of blood from the light cuts, but she sprinkled on a few drops from a phial, which stopped it at once. Gibber swabbed away the clotted blood. "Not only does the salve staunch the bleeding, but it provides a bonding glue for the seeding," Hannah explained. With the same deferential care as Gibber had shown earlier, Hannah lifted the lid off the alabaster pot. Craning for a better view, Taita saw that the pot contained a minute amount of pale yellow translucent jelly, hardly enough to cover his little fingernail. With a small silver spoon, Hannah scooped it up, and with infinite care applied it to the incisions in Merrin's eye socket. "We are ready to close the eye, Dr. Gibber," she said softly. Gibber withdrew the dilators, then pinched the lids shut between thumb and forefinger. Hannah took up a thin silver needle, threaded with a fine strand prepared from a sheep's intestine. With deft fingers she placed three stitches in the lids. While Gibber held Merrin's head, she bandaged it with the same intricate pattern of intertwined linen strips that was used by the embalmers at the Egyptian funereal temples. She left openings for Merrin's nostrils and mouth. Then she sat back on her haunches with an air of satisfaction. "Thank you, Dr. Gibber. As usual, your assistance has been invaluable." Is that all?" Taita asked. "Is the operation complete?" "If there is no mortification or other complication, I will remove the stitches in 12 days' time," Hannah replied. "Our main concern until then will be to protect the eye from light and interference by the patient. He will experience a great deal of discomfort during this period. There will be sensations of burning and itching so intense that they cannot be readily alleviated by sedatives. Although he might control himself while he is awake, in his sleep he will try to rub the eye. He must be watched day and night by trained attendants, and his hands will be bound. He must be moved to a windowless, dark cell to avoid light aggravating the pain and preventing the seeding from germinating. It will be a difficult time for your protégé, and he will need your help to come through it." "Why is it necessary to close both his eyes, even the one that is unharmed?" "If he moves the healthy eye to focus on objects it perceives, the new one will respond in sympathy. We must keep it as quiescent as possible.